former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, as we welcome you into the Lombardi Line alongside Will Hill, in for Michael today, who's traveling home from Seattle. Stormy Bonatoni with you. We've got injuries, preseason line moves, AP Top 25 reaction. Oh my, so much to get to over the course of the next 2 hours. But first and foremost, my guy, Will Hill, host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast, does great things with us here at the network. What's going on, my friend?
Stormy, what's going on? Fun time of the year. We got some unfortunate news here on the quarterback front with a rookie quarterback, but always excited to talk football with you. And we are underway. We are back. Preseason is here. College not too far away. So fun time of the year.
I know. I thought for a second that I might have a little bit of an Olympic hangover to an extent because that was so fun and such a perfect summer filler. But fortunately, we've got football on our screens and we're ready to go. And you just teed it up perfectly. We did have some unfortunate news on the quarterback front, particularly rookie stud quarterback J.J. McCarthy for the Minnesota Vikings. Head coach Kevin O'Connell on the podium earlier today, just a little bit ago within the hour, said that unfortunately the knee soreness that he was feeling over the weekend is a meniscus tear. He will need surgery, still to be determined whether or not it's something that will need a small surgery or a full repair. And as somebody who had a full meniscus repair a couple years ago, that takes months to recover from, even with all the physical therapy that's going to be at his dispense. Very unfortunate news to learn about the young kid after a great preseason week one against the Raiders.
Yeah, and I guess, look, I'm just reading up on this. I guess there are two options where he can get a trim or get a full repair, and one is a few weeks, the other is a few months. As far as the betting aspect of it, I mean, look, this is why we always talk about, you know, unders are better because injuries are going to help you. And look, if you're betting awards, if you took a shot the other day and you said, hey, McCarthy looks good, I'm going to bet rookie of the year. This is the danger of betting these awards too early or early in the summer. It's not just you're tying up your money, but hey, at least for me, unless I see a number that I really like with awards, and I know we have to do it for content and stuff, and I bet all these awards, it's just I kind of want to get to the season first. I don't want to lose my bet in August because all these bets are action. You don't get refunds. So that is, that's the betting angle. I don't know if it adjusts my ranking, my feeling on Minnesota, because I don't know how much or how early McCarthy was going to play anyway. It sounded like you're going to give Darnold half the season, and maybe if things were going well, then you plug in McCarthy. Not a big difference between McCarthy and Darnold, at least, you know, from a power rating standpoint. I mean, it raises the question, obviously, like if Darnold gets hurt, okay, now you're dealing with the Nick Mullins and Jaren Hall of the world. So that's obviously a factor, and you'd rather have McCarthy. But I don't know, does this change how you feel about Minnesota at all? Because as unfortunate as it is, and the kid looked good, and if you're a Minnesota fan, you're disappointed. I don't know that there's a bet to be made because of this.
Sure, and Minnesota is a team that, for me, at least in the preseason, I don't have any investment in. Like you said, Sam Darnold is the presumptive starting quarterback anyway, so from that standpoint, it doesn't change anything. But I think where it does get interesting is I'm sure we all thought that there would be a little bit of a short leash situation potentially for Sam Darnold with J.J. McCarthy kind of nipping at his heels a little bit. That is the guy that they expect and would hope to be the quarterback of the future, given where they drafted him this past summer. So from that stand process, I wonder if maybe there could be an impact there, but not much. So yesterday on the show with Michael Lombardi, we did put a poll out asking about which rookie quarterback impressed our audience the most in his preseason debut. Caleb Williams got the majority of the vote, but then it was J.J. McCarthy after it was Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy, somebody who he had that initial interception in the game and then played really, really well. And I think people were a little bit excited about him. I know there were reports he was expected to get more first team offense exposure this weekend. That was going to be the plan in dual practices with the Browns. So I think just a little bit of a missed opportunity for a rookie quarterback who was expected to get a lot of reps this preseason.
Yeah, and one of my big takeaways from the preseason, all the quarterbacks look pretty competent now. It's preseason. You have to throw all those caveats in there. Hey, what kind of defenses are they playing? They're playing vanilla coverage. I understand all of that, but you know, the first step, the first thing you're looking for, especially if you're a fan of one of these teams, you're betting one of these teams, does the guy look comfortable? Does he look? You don't want to see a drive, a few plays, a series, whatever, and say, uh-oh, he looks overwhelmed. He's throwing the ball to the other team. He just doesn't look ready. These guys all looked ready. They all look comfortable. They all look experienced. And, man, we needed it just from the league needs it from a quarterback standpoint because that was a big theme last year, just watching the games week in, week out, just bad quarterback play, bad quarterback here and there. And a lot of it was injury. Rodgers, Herbert, Burrow got hurt. But the league can certainly use an influx of talent at quarterback. And at least so far, so good. I know it's only a week or even a fraction of a week, but you have to like what you see from all the guys, really.
Yeah. Stephanie Kamerschack, by the way, one of our great producers here at VSiN, just before the show got started, walked across the studio here and said, I'm already seeing the memes of like Aaron Rodgers coming out with the flag like he did last year as JJ McCarthy's season. No, that's not what it's going to be. Okay, he'll be fine. Season win total for the Minnesota Vikings, by the way, set at 6.5. And again, anybody who missed the news, unfortunately, head coach Kevin O'Connell announcing this morning that JJ McCarthy will need to have meniscus surgery. A timeline is still to be determined. We do have a couple other injuries I want to get to here. Lions running back Jahmyr Gibbs coming off a sensational rookie season last year. He reportedly suffered a hamstring injury at practice yesterday. Not a big concern in the grand scheme of things, but you can't help but think when you have these soft tissue injuries in the preseason, could this be one of those lingering things if you don't give him enough rest now that could impact you later on in the season?
Yeah, and look, again, not a doctor, but we know from, you know, playing fantasy football or just betting these props and just watching sports, injuries lead to other injuries. If you come back too soon, if you have to overcompensate, you never want that. And you know, this is the time of year people picking their fantasy teams, doing their fantasy drafts. I'm curious if you've had your draft yet. I know
not
you
yet.
Like to
not yet.
Lament your team, lament your ownership of your team, which is always interesting content because I enjoy it. And I know you know, Bijan Robinson did you wrong last year, but something to keep an eye on. I mean, I don't like seeing that little. You play the leagues where they have the little red flag next to the game or the little red exclamation point where there's an injury concern. Those things, like you said, tend to linger. So something to keep in mind. And I don't know that there's a bet to be made for it, but it definitely something to keep in mind. Neighbors is another guy. And that was one, depending on who you read, what you read at first, he turned his ankle. He's fine. Then they're going for an MRI. Possibly these coaches, you know, they'll tell you who's going to play in the preseason, but they are not going to tell you injury news. They're going to, you know, be vague at best. And that's one where there was not a lot of clarity in terms of how serious that was.
So in that one, I was a little bit anxious initially because you have Daboll coming out and saying, well, we don't think it's a fracture. Like, why even say that? Why even put that out? That just feels a little bit ominous. But he did say today, it's, quote, nothing serious. Neighbors did have an MRI and x-ray done, added that he is sore and day to day. But, you know, clear cut wide receiver one for the Giants after being drafted number 6 overall. They have very high expectations for Malik Neighbors. So hopefully this low ankle sprain isn't anything to worry about long term. They did have rookie running back Tyrone Tracy carted off the field today after a non-contact drill. He left carted off, air cast on his leg. That's never a good sign. And quickly to go back to the Lions here as well, their first round rookie corner Terrion Arnold was a little bit banged up at practice as well. He left with an upper body injury, somebody that the Giants Lions drafted obviously to work on some of those secondary issues. Oh, and as I look down at my computer, thank you producer Elliot for getting in my ear about this. Jahmyr Gibbs, it is feared, has suffered an ACL injury, not a hamstring, according to Scott Erickson on X here. So the young star has had lingering hamstring issues, which correlates with ACL tears. Devastating if that ends up being the case.
Yeah, and look, that's a team they can plug and play. They have, you know, weapons. They have an offensive line where you could put Reynolds in there, you could put whoever, and you're going to get production because it's a good surroundings. That's a good supporting cast. That being said, Gibbs, I mean, they used the 10th, 12th pick on the draft on him for a reason. He's explosive. He could catch. He was finally starting to come on. After, you know, speaking of a guy that there was questions of usage early in the season, like, why did you pick him so early if you weren't going to give him the ball? And Montgomery stole a lot of his goal line stuff. But man, if you are, if we're looking at something serious with Gibbs, again, I don't know that it would lead me to an under on Detroit, but it would certainly temper your expectations, your enthusiasm. And again, we talk about it all summer. You talk about these player props. It is very dangerous to go over on anybody in terms of season long yards, receiving, rushing, passing. It's a violent game. And one injury that knocks you out for 2, 3, 4 games, that's it. You're not going to win that bet. So when in doubt, go with the under. I have a hard time playing over on any of these guys. It's just such a violent game.
This report, by the way, again, we are not saying it is a confirmed ACL injury, just that it is feared. That's the talk going on apparently in the Lions building right now. Gibbs coming off a Pro Bowl rookie season. He rushed for 949 yards, 10 touchdowns to go along with 316 receiving yards and a receiving touchdown. Really good at being that dual threat running back position. Dang, hate hearing that news. Win total for the Detroit Lions, though, sitting at 10.5. They're the second shortest shot to win the NFC this year. High expectations to build off of what they did a season ago. One more thing I want to hit before before we have to go to the break here, Will. Jets edge rusher Hassan Reddick yesterday officially requested a trade out of New York before he has even stepped foot on a practice field or play a game. And so Jordan Schultz broke the news first yesterday. All the other insiders jumped on it. And then Joe Douglas, GM of the Jets here, jumped in super quickly and put out a quote saying, "We have informed Hassan we will not trade him. He is expected to be here with his teammates, and that will he will continue to be fined per the CBA if he does not report." He's getting fined $50,000 a day. He missed one preseason game. If he continues to hold out and miss more, those are game checks he's missing. So right. Over $700,000 for those games missed. What a crazy situation we are dealing with here in New York.
Yeah, and it used to be with these holdouts, and I'm not a cap expert, but it used to be with these holdouts where, okay, once you resolve it, they can kind of wipe away the fine money and all is forgiven. I don't think that's even allowed in the CBA anymore. So it sounds like this money, you're not getting the money back for sure. And I think he turns 30 in a month. I mean, look, he's even if he sits out the whole year, the Jets still own his rights next year, and then he'll be 31. So I don't know who gives in first. It's a game of chicken here, but my guess is Reddick gives in first just because the Jets seem to hold all the cards. Okay, they gave up a third-round pick in 2026 for him. That's not a pick you want to just lose for nothing. But again, a guy that's about to turn 30, and if he sits out a year, that's 31. I just don't know what leverage he has. I think they're going to eventually figure something out, and I think Reddick has to cave.
And listen, I get why he wants a new deal. The bar's moved. He's had 50 and a half sacks over the last four seasons, fourth most in the league, yet his average annual value ranks 20th or so for the position. But that said, this is, to your point, this is like a shining example. Let this be known to all 32 teams around the National Football League right now. Do not trade for a player unless you have a deal in place and tell him, we're not trading for you unless you sign this. This handshake deal that they did in April has been a disaster. Like, this is not the way that things should go. And see, this is why I have problems with the Jets, Will. It's not just, it's just not me. This is what they do to me. This is what they do to everybody. I'm not crazy.
I understand. I can certainly, if you tell me, hey, I have pessimism about the Jets, it's hard to argue based on their past.
Understand. Leadership, do your job. We'll be right back. Talking a little college football next. You won't want to miss it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Will Hill in for Michael Lombardi today. I'm Stormy Bonatoni. Big NFL news of the morning. A couple things, actually, with the Minnesota Vikings. Their young rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, according to head coach Kevin O'Connell, has suffered a meniscus injury, will need to have surgery. Determining the timeline beyond that, still unknown. And as we referenced in the last segment as well, Lions running back, rookie sensation from a year ago, Jahmyr Gibbs, dealing with a hamstring injury. We did say in the last segment, there was a report that there was a feared potential ACL there. Multiple reports from all the big insiders coming out have just clarified it is a hamstring right now. So very good news on that front. But from that thing, we're talking about a lot of young players, very fresh out of the college game, Will. Let's switch gears there a little bit. Jahmyr Gibbs, alma mater, Alabama, ranked number 5 in the AP preseason poll that came out yesterday. Top 5 for the 15th consecutive season, longest streak in the country. But it's also their lowest preseason ranking during that time as we have a transition from head coach Nick Saban to now Kalen DeBoer. But let's go through this a little bit. The top team in the country, according to the AP in the preseason, the Georgia Bulldogs, for the second year in a row in that spot. The bad news for Georgia fans or backers, however, that 18 of the last 20 AP preseason number one have failed to win the national title, including Georgia last year. We got Ohio State at 2, Oregon 3, Texas 4, Bama, as I mentioned, 5, Ole Miss 6, Notre Dame 7. And that's where I want to stop, Will, to ask you this, because since 2004, every national champion except for two were ranked among the AP top 7 teams in the preseason. The exceptions, Florida State with Jameis Winston in 2013, Auburn in 2010, as producer Elliot so kindly pointed out yesterday, top 7 team or the Heisman winner. That's basically what has determined a national champion here. As you look at these teams, is there anybody outside of the top 7 you think could be a realistic shot to win it all?
Probably not. This is a chalk sport, and I think it'll continue to be a chalk sport. I mean, you could put all the teams you want in the playoffs, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20. I mean, we see it all the time in March Madness. You put in 64, 68 teams. Guess what? We can pretty much pick who the winner is going to be out of a handful of teams. Now you get some sleepers that go to the Final Four. You get some upsets, maybe go to a national championship game. But I think the same thing with college football, where you can pick the winner out of two or three teams. I mean, look, South Point put up the prop, Georgia, Ohio State versus the field, and it's a pick 'em either way. So, you know, one team that jumps out to me that looks too high is Texas. I just think they lost a lot at receiver. I'm not a big believer in Quinn Ewers. I don't know if we'll see Arch Manning if things get off to a slow start. I know that'll be a you know, a talking point and good for people in content, because that name gets clicks and gets attention. And I just think they were a big calling card for them. And I actually watched, they had a replay of the game against Washington the other night, and that was just such a crazy game, that playoff game. And it's so close to stealing that game. But their calling card was stuffing the run, being good up front, big up front defensively. They lost a lot of that beef in the middle defensively. I just don't know that they're, you know, the fourth best team. I got to figure out who I'm bumping up. I think Bama's probably better than them. I just think Texas is a bit overrated here. I don't know about Sarkisian as this type of coach. I think they're overvalued there at four.
The odds for those top four or five teams, rather, Georgia 3-1 favorite to win it all, sitting there at number one, Ohio State plus 380, Oregon plus 750, Texas plus 850. And Will, this is their highest preseason ranking since 2009, when they played for a national championship and lost to Alabama, who sits there at 14-1, along with Ole Miss. For Ole Miss, this is their highest preseason ranking since the 70s. These are some serious expectations for a program that has not had them like this in a while. And I'm curious if they're a team that can live up to that this year.
I have my questions. I know we're going to talk about some of these awards, I think, later in the show. I think they're good for their 10 wins. I think they're good for their over. I'm generally optimistic. I think they have a lot of talent. They hit the portal well. They, you know, they have a very favorable schedule. I mean, it is cupcake city to week six, week seven, which I like. I think, you know, when you have a hard schedule, it compounds itself with just week in, week out. You're tired physically, tired mentally. I think Ole Miss, it's the opposite, where you play these, you know, cupcakes, Furman, Middle Tennessee State, Georgia Southern, Wake Forest, Kentucky, LSU is your toughest game early on. And that's mid-October, where you're going to come in probably fresh as a daisy, not have to play your guys, you know, in the fourth quarter, a lot of these games. And you're just going to come in rested and ready for the tough part of your schedule. So I think they can get to 10. Now, when you're ranked six, you have bigger, bigger goals. You're thinking, can I get to a Final Four? Can I get to a national championship? That I can't get there with Lane Kiffin. I just need to see it. They just always struggle when they step up in class. And I know they only lost two games last year, but those losses last year were loud. Bama, Georgia just absolutely buried them. Kiffin, I just have to see it with them. But I do think they're good for an over. I do think they're good for a playoff spot. And I guess once you get in, you can make the case anything can happen. I'm just, for me, the way to play them is the over, make the playoffs. I think if you're going anything past that, I just think that's too ambitious.
So this is an interesting question that Brett McMurphy of the Action Network posted on X yesterday about preseason top 10 teams, that there's always one, it seems, that goes from being top 10 in the preseason to being unranked altogether by the end of the year. And
right.
Michael and I on the show yesterday said, as we were looking through that top 10, Michigan kind of stands out as the team it could likely be. Maybe Penn State as well. Like, we all love to get on this. James Franklin's finally going to do it this year. I remember all the hype I had for Drew Aller last year. And then he was basically the college football equivalent of Derek Carr. And so it was just the dink and dunk master. And we never saw the downfield pass game we wanted. They ultimately lost the two game season that they always seem to lose. At least this year, they don't have to do that. But who are the teams that stand out to you as potential teams that are currently ranked in the top 10 that might not be here at the end of the year?
Yep, Michigan, you nailed it. And this is just the AP voters are different than the betting market and the people setting the lines, where it's just respect for winning the national championship. But there's not a lot from this year's team that resembles last year's team, where it's only a handful of guys. You lose your quarterback, speaking of J.J. McCarthy, you lose your quarterback, you lose your coach. And you could say the coach filled in last year as an interim role on game day. That's much different than, hey, here's the keys, you're the head coach for the full season. Completely different. I have enough respect for Harbaugh where I can't just dismiss that as a factor. And they just lost so much defensively. They lost so many starters. You know, they have a pretty tough schedule. I can't put them in the top 10. The team, and again, if you're going to have to bump somebody from the top 10, you got to see somebody that can rise up. And I also think Notre Dame, by the way, offensive line issues. I just don't know. That's a team, speaking of teams that need to prove it. They need to prove it because they can never win a game against the upper echelon teams. The team I would raise is Utah. I think Utah, it just never got on track last year. Rising never got healthy. We kept waiting. Is he going to play this week? Is he going to play this week? Well, he never played. I think there were some other guys who were questionable, banged up, who just said, you know what, this isn't our year. I think this is the year where they have circled If Rising's healthy, I think Utah is probably a top 10 team. I think they're too low.
Me too. I did a write-up for the Utes in the College Football Betting Guide, which, by the way, you want the College Football Betting Guide, the NFL Betting Guide, head to VSiN.com/subscribe for $175. You get everything VSiN has to offer. It really is. From now through the Super Bowl, you get both of those guides, which for me, any one of those guides would be worth it, yes, considering the value and time that is put in those things. So VSiN.com/subscribe, get set up for everything this football season, the college game or the NFL. But I wrote up Utah and how I am buying everything that they're selling right now. Will, I like their season win total. I like them to win the Big 12. I like the plus money price that you get on them just to make the Big 12 title game, because given the way their schedule shakes out, it feels very likely they're at the very least going to make that game, for them to make the playoff, all these things. Yep. If Cam Rising stays healthy, this team's gonna, the sky's the limit in my opinion.
Yeah, and last year, I mean, their calling card is always line play. They're good up front, defensively, offensively. That wasn't the case last year. I think they'll be better this year, tougher. Yeah,
I agree.
You mentioned the guide. It's such a good point, because nobody's going to get the guide and say, oh, I wish I didn't get it, it was a waste of money. You're going to get the guide. You're going to love it. You're going to be happy you got it. For $175, they get everybody's picks, or they just get your picks?
If it was only mine, they would not be worth the value. No, everybody, hosts, experts, analysts. It's unbelievable. It's great.
I don't know who approved that. It's a steal.
No, it's so good. But Utah, I actually thought, got a good amount of respect being ranked in the top 12 like they did. Same thing with Missouri. And obviously they proved themselves last year. They bring back Luther Burden. They bring back Brady Cook. But when it comes to their schedule, it just lays out so well for them that they avoid all the big dogs in the SEC. Yes. If there's a quote unquote easy SEC schedule, Missouri freaking has it this year.
Yep. And with these expanded conferences, the schedule is so important, because I know a team, speaking of the guide, a team you and I both like in the ACC, we can talk about them later.
Yeah.
It's just the schedules are not the same. You're going to go through some of these teams where, wow, the four of the five best teams, they don't have to play SMU, where, Miami, Clemson, Georgia Tech, not Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, and Florida State's at home, where these conferences are just not aligned to the point where everybody plays the same schedule. Everyone's on equal footing. There's major advantages and disadvantages with these expanded conferences.
Well, let's throw this. I see the graphic up there for the Missouri Tigers schedule. Just for example, again, their preseason win total set at 9.5, and it is plus money to the over at +105 plus 135 according to this graphic. But no Georgia, no Ole Miss, no Tennessee. Like just go through this. There is a world where they could be undefeated when they go into Tuscaloosa on October 26th, the big test that they're going to have before that. October 5th at Texas A&M, playing in that environment at Kyle Field is always going to be difficult. But new coach, a lot of newness over at A&M, real chance to win that game. Like, high expectations for Missouri. And given the schedule that they have, one I think they could live up to if their defense just holds up. That's always going to be the big question about Missouri, where things stand right now. Okay, we're going to hit the break. Fun to talk a little college football. We will do that again later on in the show, as you referenced, looking at some really interesting awards markets that are available. But when we come back, yesterday we tackled wide receiver head-to-head props. Today we're tackling the QB1 position. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Michael will be back with us tomorrow. Excited to have Will Hill sitting in that chair, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. It's great things with us here at VSiN. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, as we welcome you back to hour two of the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network. Talk a little New York Jets here, as the news over the last 24 hours is that edge rusher who got traded to the team back in April, Hassan Reddick, has officially requested a trade from the organization, despite not having stepped a foot on a practice field or game yet. Just continues to rack up fines after fines. And general manager Joe Douglas was very quick to respond himself and say, sorry, Hassan, we are not going to trade you. To help us get the load on that and all things New York Jets, we welcome in Andy Vasquez on the Progressive Gets Line, Jets reporter for the Star Ledger at @Andy_Vasquez on X. I think the big question here, Andy, right now is just, how did we get to this point? How did the Jets bring Reddick over here without pen to paper on a deal in the first place? And how does this thing end?
Yeah, it's a strange situation. I think, my assumption throughout the offseason and even early in training camp, before it became clear this was going to be a thing, was that both sides needed a deal to get done. I mean, the Jets need Reddick because they've lost a ton of production from their edge rushers from last year. They've lost two starters. And Reddick obviously needs the Jets, if not only for short-term money, but if he has any chance at a long-term deal, if it's not with the Jets, he has to play this year. So my assumption, and I think a lot of people's assumption, was that something would get done because of that. And clearly the Jets don't seem to feel the same way in terms of them needing Reddick. I mean, if you look at that statement yesterday, it's pretty clear, like, the Jets are only going to do negotiations with him on their own terms, which is him showing up to camp, which has been widely reported. So that's what they want before they negotiate with him. They're not going to negotiate with a player who's not in camp. So that statement from Joe Douglas made it clear where the Jets stand. And as to me, and not everybody feels this way, but from my standpoint, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to trade for a guy who's only on the market because he wants a new contract and then basically be unwilling to negotiate with him or be unwilling to really budge off the way you want it because of what he may or may not have indicated, not put on paper, they wanted to do. So I think it's just, you know, to me, I think the Jets do need Reddick. I think their defense could be very good without him, but it's going to be a lot to overcome. And I think they're kind of playing with fire here, but again, they obviously don't feel the same way if you look at their public comments and that statement from Joe Douglas.
Andy, it's interesting because Reddick is about to be 30, and if he doesn't play this year, Jets still own his rights. So it seems like the Jets have some leverage here. Would you agree with that? And how do you think this ultimately plays out here?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have the leverage, and there's no doubt about that because his contract will toll, and he'll come back to the Jets next year without getting any of the $14.25 million he was owed. So they certainly have the leverage, but again, they traded for a guy who wanted a new contract. So there's a difference between like winning the contract or winning the Super Bowl or being a winning team. And like the Jets can easily win this contract negotiation and make life miserable on Reddick. But if they get him to play, what kind of player is he going to be? What is this team going to be like without him? What is the message that's going to send to any other player in the future who maybe wants to be a part of this team? Now, if the Jets are good enough to overcome it, none of it will matter. That's kind of how they are treating this. But I would remind you, the Jets have the longest playoff drought in American professional sports. Not like things have gone well for them. This could ultimately backfire in a spectacular way and define Joe Douglas's legacy here. So they have the leverage for sure. And if they're clearly betting that Hassan Reddick is going to blink, but if he doesn't, it's going to be a strange, messy situation. I mean, it's already a strange situation. Who are we kidding? But it's at this point, it's hard to predict how it's going to go because this has gone so much further than anybody really could have imagined it going, because it just doesn't make sense from a lot of standpoints. So I don't know what's next, but yeah, I mean, I think it's possible that Reddick blinks. Maybe the Jets make a slight concession and start negotiations. I think that would be the wise thing to do and get something done because I think they need him. But it also could go the other way, and you're looking at a Le'Veon Bell type situation, and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, it's a weird situation, but again, I don't understand trading for a guy who wants a new contract and then not negotiating with him.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's like everybody knew what they were getting into when they signed him. Andy Vasquez, Jets reporter, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And you mentioned that playoff drought. I'm sure Jets fans are very well aware of how long it's been. And the guy that they think can pull them out of the abyss is Aaron Rodgers. I know you talked to him moments ago on the podium. When it comes to his health right now, coming back from the Achilles last year, where does he feel as we enter week two of the preseason, getting set for the year?
Yeah, a few weeks ago when the Jets reported, actually, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, a week into practice, he said he's still getting that comfortability with the Achilles. And he's physically, it's like all the way back, but it's like being able to test it. So he said he was 95% in that confidence. And today he said he was about 98%. And they joked, I think I have an extra gear. I'm not sure how much of an extra gear. But they had a crazy long practice day, longest practice of camp. It'll probably end up being the longest practice of camp, about 2.5 hours. I think he threw 31 passes. Very busy day for him. And he said, the days like this make me feel like I'm ready. So he had some plays where he was scrambling. Obviously, his own teammates aren't going to hit him. although he joked that the way the offense did today, he has to worry about his own defense hitting him the next couple of days, because they had a really good day. It was the best the offense has looked throughout camp, the best Rodgers has looked throughout camp. And I think what you're seeing physically from Rodgers is that he looks a lot like he did pre-Achilles. I think there's still like some movement restriction, or you can still see that he's maybe second guessing, or when guys are around his feet, he notices it a little bit more. But in terms of his arm, when the Jets were in Green Bay in 2021 for joint practices, we got to watch Rodgers practice for a couple of days. It looks like that. And he won the MVP this year. His arm is still as good as it was then, maybe even better, he says. And I think there's a very good chance he's going to be very good for the Jets this year. And if even if he's not good, if he has an okay season by Aaron Rodgers standards, he'll have one of the best seasons in Jets quarterback history. Because they haven't had a 4,000-yard passer since Joe Namath back when the schedule was only 14 games.
Andy, what's your general outlook? I know it's hard to trust the Jets, but the schedule, the talent, it has me very optimistic about them. Do you share those sentiments, and where do you ultimately think their record is?
Yeah, you look up and you see Breece Hall, you see Garrett Wilson, and it's hard to think like this team isn't going to be pretty good, especially when you look at the numbers they put up and the success they had with no quarterback. And then you look at what their defense is. I think it always threatens to get derailed, but I think they're going to be in the mix for the AFC East. I think they'll be right there with Buffalo. I think they're better than Miami, and I think there's a strong argument they're the most talented team in the division. I don't think they're a Super Bowl favorite, but they have an outside chance if everything goes well and if their young players take a step forward, another step forward of being that kind of a team. So I think 11 wins. I think they will not win the AFC East, but I do think they'll win a playoff game. And I think that would be a good year for a franchise that has not had really anything to feel good about in a long time.
And that 11 wins would go over the season win total set at 9.5. That is juiced to the over. But Andy, when it comes to the expectations internally and from ownership, like what is a successful enough season to have a guy like Robert Saleh keep his job given the turmoil of the last couple of years? Is 11 wins and a playoff appearance enough in that sense?
I do. I think it's a weird spot because fans are so negative because it's been so long since the team was good. But also, like, that means the bar for success is, like, not that high. I think if they play well and win a playoff game, I think that's more than enough. I think even getting to the playoffs, again, I think it should be higher, like, considering the amount of talent on this team. But I do think there's this weird thing where, like, fans and everyone is so desperate and hungry for success. And if you can spin this year forward, like, hey, we took a step in the right direction and Aaron Rodgers still has it at 41 and he's going to be 41 for most of next year. You could see them keeping their jobs even, you know, if they fall short of maybe what they should be with their talent. So I think, and it's this weird spot. Like if things go poorly early in the season, everyone, it's going to be ugly, toxic. Everyone's going to be out to get everyone. But if they have some success, even if it's a modest amount of success, like I think it's going to be viewed as a success just because of the pain of the last decade and a half.
Andy, this is really, really great insight. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's Andy Vasquez. Follow him on X at @Andy_Vasquez, doing great stuff as a Jets beat reporter for the Star Ledger and NJ.com. Do you agree in terms of the level of success for the Jets? 11 win season, playoffs, that's enough?
If he made the playoffs, I'd have a hard time seeing them dismiss a coach. If they break the drought, make the playoffs. I know you want a little more if you're the Jets, but it'd be hard to see him getting fired after making the playoffs. I agree.
I appreciated his honesty, though. Like, a lot of people have talked about the Jets as if it's Super Bowl or bust this year. Nah. Things got to come together. But I thought that was a more leveled perspective, and I appreciate that again. Really appreciate Andy taking the time, especially just about 20 seconds after Aaron Rodgers got off the podium. We were able to get him on the show with us. Another great guest coming up next, Thor Nystrom, college football analyst for Fantasy Life. Get his thoughts on the AP Top 25 that came out yesterday for the preseason, and which odds-on favorite to make the CFP does he think might be a bet to miss?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're cruising on a Tuesday as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line alongside Will Hill today. Stormy Bonatoni with you. Going to get into a little college football here for the final half hour of the program. Really excited to have Thor Nystrom, who joins us on the Progressive Guest Line, college football analyst for Fantasy Life. Also does a great job as a draft analyst, which, Thor, I'm sorry, this is where I have to start, because we talked so much this summer about your excitement for J.J. McCarthy. You think that he really has the build to be a great pro. And then one preseason game and he's got a torn meniscus. How are you feeling?
I had to put myself together to get on the air with you guys. It's a tough scene in Minnesota this morning. And, you know, he had so much progress during practices from the OTAs to the beginning of training camp. And then he just ripped up the Raiders on Saturday with the backup receivers on the Vikings. And so to get this news, I was out in Eagan last night. They had the night practice. It was like the last time when all the fans can come and like pack the, you know, the facility and watch the practice. We found out J.J. McCarthy was not practicing like 30 minutes before. That was devastating enough. Oh. But then, of course, today's news is tough. And we'll see. They're going to go in there. They're going to find out whether it's short or long term. You know, like they don't even know the severity of it. They just know that there's going to be a procedure. So crossing the fingers, hoping for the best. But yeah, J.J. McCarthy's chances now to start week one, which I thought were starting to look pretty good, they're now shot.
Or as a Vikings fan, I've waited 30 years for a quarterback. So what's another few months? No big deal here. But does this change your outlook here on the Vikings going forward?
Not really, to be honest. Like the only thing is, I did think that JJ was starting to make a real argument to start week one. And mm-hmm. and obviously now it's going to be that plan that, you know, everyone has sort of bandied about of like Darnold, maybe through the bye week, maybe to midseason. Vikings have a tough early schedule. You have the easy opener, easy. I mean, the line's, you know, under three, but against the Giants. And then after that, it's a gauntlet until the bye. And you're playing that stretch without TJ Hockenson. It looks like now they might have Addison. The Addison suspension might come later. I think his court date's in October. But yeah, I mean, with this, now it's just pretty easy. Now you put it off till after the bye of when we're going to see JJ first. I don't think it affects this year's team very much. And long term, I certainly don't as well. But still, tough scene around here.
I'm outnumbered here by the Vikings fans. Will, where's your hat?
Right over there. I can see it from where I'm at. I want to put it on in solidarity, but you know, I've got to keep it professional.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, that hat I didn't even notice when we first welcomed you in, Thor, but there you Beautiful. Go. You came to represent nicely. Win total for the Minnesota Vikings this year set at 6.5. They're 10-1 in the division. Let's go to a little college football talk here. We saw the AP release their preseason top 25 yesterday. Your initial thoughts, any teams that you felt were maybe a little overrated or underrated, whether it comes to the poll, and obviously there are odds that are associated with a lot of that as well.
You know, this year, I don't know. I thought they did better than in a lot of years where there's teams that are artificially pumped up or, you know, what, like whatever, because of last year. I thought they did a decent job of acknowledging reality. Like you see Michigan drops down to 9. I was looking at my power ratings. I have Michigan 9, mm-hmm. like the current iteration of the team. I also found it very interesting, the bullishness on Ole Miss, that Ole Miss comes in at 6 in that poll. But then I looked at my power rankings. I have them 7, right? So, like, I think they did a good job of the teams that needed to be knocked down, and appropriately so, and then the teams high up there. The top 3 of it, top 4 of it, actually top 5 now that I'm looking at it, is the exact same order as my power rankings. Wow. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama. So, I mean, it seems like the analytics and looking deeper into stuff, they're doing better with these first polls.
Or what's your favorite future? Because we were kicking it around before the show. They have awards for Doak Walker, Mackey Award, which I haven't seen in the past. That makes it fun. But awards, conference title, futures, to make the playoffs, take it whatever direction you want to go. What's your favorite future on the board?
Favorite long shot one is Texas State to make the CFP. We know that there's going to be one wow. G5 team that makes it. And if you win the Sun Belt, especially if you only have one loss, I think you're in play. Because Boise State's going to take at least one loss because they got to play at Oregon. They ain't winning that game. And then Liberty, Liberty plays by far the easiest schedule in the nation, like 134 out of 134. My metrics say it's not close. But if they go undefeated again, and I expect them to, you're going to have that argument. If you have a good, say, one loss G5 conference champion in another conference of, we let Liberty in last year after they went undefeated against that dog, you know what, schedule that they played, and they got hammered by Oregon. So that would open the door potentially for a team like Texas State. I think their schedule sets up very well as well. they get Arizona State and UTSA in San Marcos. And the Sun Belt slate looks manageable as well. I believe they duck Appalachian State. Yep. They'll have to play them in the conference title game, but maybe Appalachian State takes care of Liberty before then. We'll find out. But Texas State would be one of them for sure for me to win both the Sun Belt, but then also make the college football playoff.
I love that thought process, Thor. And as somebody who was on the sideline covering that Fiesta Bowl last year when Oregon pounded Liberty, like, we don't want to see that again. And I do think that the College Football Playoff Selection Committee has probably learned from that experience a little bit. And they are doing and talking about all the right things, like strength of schedule is important for them. And the way you win games is important. And for Liberty, the schedule they have is so easy. They're going to go through it. I don't think that you can commit just because they're undefeated, giving them that opportunity. So I love that. My pick was Boise State, but I respect the Texas State angle a ton. I want to go back to some of those high level teams in the poll real quickly, because our friend Tim Murray, who you of course know well here at the network, he had a really interesting tweet that he put up about the 7 college football teams that are favored to make the college football playoff. And if of these odds on favorites, if there was one that you might have interest in betting the opposite side, taking the plus money on them to miss the playoffs. So we're looking at Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ole Miss. I mean, I don't even hate throwing in Alabama because they're even money. Any of those teams you think favored to make, you think could miss?
I would say of those teams, I would go Alabama if they're included. And then Ole Miss would probably be the other one from that list. Tim, I hate to jinx your team. I know you're listening out there. I think Notre Dame is making the CFP. I'm over on their win total. I think they're going to make the CFP. Notre Dame picked the perfect season to have a very easy schedule. Sometimes they have the gauntlet schedule. This year, not so much. I definitely think that they make it. And those top 4 teams, it's going to take an injury for them to not make it. And perhaps a couple for instance, Georgia, but Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, I don't know how they mess with how talented they are. You're just sort of parsing through the other teams, but Alabama's an easy fade. Year one of DeBoer. How does Jalen Milroe fit in with that system? Obviously he likes to use his legs more, has the cannon for an arm. But the timing concepts and the accuracy in the intermediate range, anticipatory throws, some of those things, we haven't really seen those clubs in his bag yet. I know Kalen DeBoer is a miracle worker. It's going to have to be real quick, though, for Alabama to make the playoff with the schedule they're playing.
Or week one game you're most excited to watch, week one game you're most excited to bet. Take it whatever direction you want.
This probably wouldn't be for other people, but I'm excited to go to the Bank Stadium here with Minnesota hosting UNC, because I think UNC is going to be down. I'm out on UNC this year, and I think Gophers could sneakily be better than people think. So I'd be on the Gophers in that one. As far as other betting opportunities, I'm fading LSU early as well. I got to get the board up in front of me, but those are a couple quick ones.
We talked a lot on the show yesterday about Colorado, and I am curious, like, your thoughts genuinely on who this team, what this team can be this year.
Oh, such a tough proposition. I want to believe, to for Deion Sanders and his press conferences from last year. And I did more or less, but the stuff recently, you're starting to get the negative stench. Even if you're the believer, you have Deion being antagonistic during the press conferences. You wonder where his head is at. Obviously, some of those star players are a bit defiant. And then I think you're going to see some weird things with the depth chart as well. For instance, they shoved out Dylan Edwards left on his own volition, the 4-star kid running back that they had gotten from Kansas. He transfers out to go to Kansas State. They bring in Dallin Hayden, a guy who was stuck behind a whole bunch of guys at Ohio State. And Dallin Hayden was expecting to be the starter. He hasn't been taking the first team reps there. This no-name kid, Charlie Offerdale, a receiving back, has been like, but it's not the only position where it's like a little head scratching. We'll see if Deion is the smartest guy in the room, or if this is the year where you have 2 top 10 NFL draft prospects with a team that is not going to make a bowl game. I think this one could go either way.
Thor, the analysis so good as always, and stay strong, buddy. JJ will get better.
Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you guys.
Thor Nystrom, everybody. Make sure you check out Fantasy Life and follow him on X at ThorKU. Preseason total for the Buffs sitting at 5.5. And there are a lot of people, by the way, that think Colorado could be on upset watch week one as an 8.5-point favorite against FCS North Dakota State, who's the number 2 FCS team in the country in their initial rankings. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Let's keep the college football talk rolling. This has been a long tease all show. We've been talking about some unique awards markets that are out there. Will Hill's going to give us his thoughts and initial leans in those markets. We'll be right back closing things out on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line.